Hey everyone, welcome to the Heal the Hurt podcast. We hope your day is going well so far, and we hope that we're able to improve it for you at least a little bit with our message today. I'm here with my good friend Allie. Allie works for Brighton Recovery Center here in Utah. Allie, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Chris. How are you doing?
So good. It's a great day. It's sunny already. Wonderful day here in Utah. So what's new? What's going on in your life lately?
Well, I just wrapped up my first semester back in college since I got sober. That was eventful, to say the least, a lot of emotions. Working full-time with that, raising a puppy, and able to get all A's. So that was an awesome experience for me to test the limits, I think, of what I am capable of. And not only mentally, but emotionally as well. I think I forgot, because I flunked out of college, 11 years ago. I think I forgot the emotional toll it takes, because I didn't stay in long enough to experience the toll, So yeah. I give credit to everyone that has their degrees already, because it's hard work. So
yeah, it is. That's awesome. I'm excited to hear about your grades. That's amazing. You're awesome. Nice job with that. That's tough to balance your education and employment at the same time. And then I think we all underestimate how much time and effort goes into raising a puppy as well. And so we think of it as like it's a fun little hobby and it's no big deal. It's, we get all this companionship and that's, yeah. Okay. I can hear that, but there's a whole lot more to it as well. So,
oh man. Yeah. I think it's hands down the hardest thing I've ever done for
really?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yep. For sure. He's a hard puppy, but the quarantine has been really good for both of us, because I've been able to stay home with him and train him more. So he's 10 million times better than he was 2 months ago. So yeah. I'm grateful for that.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to start real quickly with a little bit of your story. As is tradition with the Heal the Hurt podcast, we want to know what your hurt has been, at least a portion of it. And some of us in life, those who come on this show, and then also our listeners, and then those who have never even heard of us and never will hear of us, we all have pain, and we all have varying degrees of pain. And so one of our purposes, one of our missions is to highlight some stories that tend to be inspiring, in that we're looking at how we heal from hurt, how we heal from pain, and how we overcome suffering. And so I want you to tell us something in your life that has been difficult for you, that's been pain, that's been hurt, that you've healed from.
Well, I think the biggest thing most definitely is being raised religious and being a part of the LGBTQ community that did not coincide necessarily with being a part of that religion. Mm-hmm. Or really, really struggling with how to feel loved by God. And that was, I think, the biggest internal struggle I had for many, many, many years. And, really led to me and my drug use, like most definitely, And I just didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to fit in. I didn't know who I was. I didn't really know anything really, And the decisions I made to turn to substances, ultimately led me down a path I just never thought I'd go down, and the hurt mainly being, I hurt my family a lot. I hurt me a lot, most definitely, but I adore my family and I'm the baby of 5 kids. I love them so much, my nieces and nephews, I have 12, I'm super grateful for them. And I think the route I went down of homelessness and losing everything and everyone, and really just feeling what it's like to, I mean, Chris, that wasn't how I was raised. I was raised in Cottonwood Heights, Utah. My family, I never knew what that situation looked like, but we never hurt for money. I never hurt with anything I needed. I got anything I ever needed. And being, on the other side of, I think, the lowest that you could get as far as the human population goes, of being the homeless junkie and being spit on and being kicked and begging people for money every day, I think I think that's really opened my eyes to, okay, I really need to start the journey of trying to love myself, you know, and accept myself and find out who I am and find out my purpose and find out why I'm here and find out, you know, what I believe in. Who am I? What do I believe in? And, you know, it's been a long journey. The first rehab I went to, I was 21. I'm 30 now. I've been sober for almost 2.5 years. And so it was, you know, 8 treatments later, it was, you know, finally able to get a little glimpse of it to be able to stay sober, to be able to remove the substance. Okay, awesome. Now let's get the real work done, you know? And I think that's where people kind of don't understand, I guess, people who don't struggle with addiction or even people who might, you know, my viewpoint on it is putting the substance away is actually the first part and the easiest part in the long scale of things of, okay, now you get to go the rest of your life without having that coping mechanism that you're so used to. And you have to feel the hurt. You have to feel the pain of decisions you've made in the past, new decisions you make that, you know, you don't have the substance to go, oh, I was drunk, you know, like, you know, it's, you still don't make awesome decisions even when you're in recovery, you know, and dealing with that and just all the trauma, you know, dealing with that and working through that and not having the substance there to put that Band-Aid on, it's gone, you know. And not to minimize getting sober, it's definitely incredibly difficult. It's just, to me, in my experience, just the tip of the iceberg, you know.
That's incredible. I thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm so fascinated as we've been, you know, we've known each other for a while, and me having a wonderful opportunity to see you in so many, like the word glorious is just right there in my mind, just so many glorious opportunities and moments in your life where you've been at peace, where there have been so many good things happening for you as a result of your recovery, as a result of good choices you've made now in your life. And as you talked about homelessness and as you talked about just the absolute misery and suffering that takes place with that, for you, what was the hardest part about that?
Oh man, I think, honestly, Chris, I think the hardest part was seeing a life that I didn't know existed. You know, meeting people on the streets, seeing kids on the streets, and talking to these humans and getting to know these humans that I never normally would have. You know, I would normally never have conversations with these people until I became one of these people. Mm-hmm. And just seeing and feeling the pain and misery that exists in the world, it just hurts, you know. And I mean, still to this day, I have such a passion for the homeless community because I think I was not treated like a human. You know, I was not treated with any sort of dignity. I was treated as less than. And, you know, I don't think the average human would just spit on a human or kick them, you know. And yell
certainly
at them.
Certainly hope not, yeah.
Yeah, you'd hope, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's just, it just opened up my eyes to this pain that exists in the world that I didn't know about. Because I knew the substance abuse pain, right? Well, there's this whole other pain of not everyone that's homeless struggles with substance abuse. A lot right. are mental health. You know, that's the underlying issue. And I think the hardest part was for me was just feeling so alone. You know, feeling so alone and sleeping in alleyways and sleeping on the sidewalk and just not having any sort of connection other than these new people I got to know. But the new people I got to know it was just pain. You know, we just mm-hmm. shared this pain and misery connection. And it was like, how do we get out of this? You know, what do we do? How do we create a life for ourselves? It was a topic that came up a lot. You know, I think some people think it's people just give up and they just don't care when they're homeless. But I mean, I think you'd be surprised at how many conversations happen on the daily of, man, how can we get out of here? What can we do to better our lives? And it just seems impossible. No resources, no money, you know. I'm incredibly, incredibly blessed with the people I have in my life. You know, I had the opportunity to live with a friend of mine I had nowhere to go. And, you know, I had AMA'd from treatment and was too prideful to go back there, and had the opportunity to live with a friend of mine that just embraced me and helped me, and her family just embraced me and loved me and really treated me like a human, knowing, you know, I just came from the streets. Like I am a heroin addict, and that love and that humanity, it just changed my life forever, you know, and taught me that, you know, my relationship with my own family was strained. I've been able to work on that immensely. It's great today, but at the time it wasn't, and I didn't have anyone, you know? So I think, I think that would be it. I think the hardest part was feeling alone, most definitely, very lonely and alone. I think there's a difference between feeling alone and feeling lonely. You know, I think lonely is a feeling that's sometimes a good thing. Self-soothing is something that is important. You know, why am I lonely? What's going on? Do I need something to fix me? Or do I just need to self-soothe and I can sit in this loneliness and it's okay? But feeling alone is a feeling I don't feel today because of my relationship with a higher power that I did not have then. And it's changed everything for me.
For those who don't know, AMA, you mentioned you had AMA'd from treatment, and AMA is a term that we use in treatment, in residential treatment, or I guess even outpatient, but mental health and addiction treatment. And it just stands for against medical advice or against clinical advice, meaning, you know, the staff there said, these are our recommendations, and whomever they're giving those recommendations to said, in no uncertain terms, no, thank you, I'm going to do it my way. And sometimes that includes some, you know, vulgarity and some gestures and some threats and a little bit of violence every once in a while, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But so for those who caught that but didn't know what that means, against medical advice, and that happens, unfortunately, that happens a lot. Yeah, in my experience, in our experience together, we've worked together side by side in this work, and I've had that wonderful opportunity to see you and see that passion that you mentioned just a moment ago. But I want to ask you first, before we jump into your why and what really lights you on fire to do this work that you do now and in your pursuits of your long-term goals. But when you were homeless and you were talking about having those conversations with your peers there, what were those solutions that you guys talked about? What were the theories, or what did you brainstorm? What did you say, we need to do this, or this is our plan? What were some of those things?
The first step, I was blessed enough that I had insurance. Most of them did not. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the resources for that. So a lot of steps were, okay, now how do we go get on insurance so that we have the ability to detox? Because, and these are, for example, someone that struggles with substance abuse and someone that I was talking with. And I mean, that's the first step in trying to gain any sort of life. But then it was, okay, play the tape through. I go to detox. I get on insurance. I go get on Medicaid. I go to detox. Let's say we do that. Mm-hmm. Then what? I don't have anywhere to live. I don't have anywhere to go. The conversations honestly didn't really go very far, because for me, it was, I could, I mean, but that was the difference for me, was where am I going to go after? Okay. Yes. Yeah. I have this insurance that I can go to detox. But like I said, I was too prideful to go back to treatment. I, at that point, hadn't lowered my ego enough to say, okay, I'll do whatever it takes. I wasn't there yet. So, and a lot of other people, surprisingly, with how broken we were, they weren't there yet either. So it was, okay, I'm willing to go to detox and clear the substances from my body, but then what? And then the conversation would kind of die, because there was no money and there was no family left. Everyone had given up. Everyone was done with our crap, you know? Mm-hmm. So it would pretty much die at that point, because they're, what then? With no money, yeah, what can you do?
Well, that makes me think of something that I've seen over and over and over again, this concept of detox, meaning literally in drug treatment, substance abuse treatment, the chemicals are out of our body. They're gone. We can pass a drug test. But so many people believe, and I think our society is accepting this more and more now, that it's not about the drug. It isn't alcohol. It's not heroin. It's not meth. It's not coke. It's not marijuana. It's not even prescriptions. There's something beneath the surface that's going on. There's a poison that is the actual problem. And so the phrase, drugs aren't the problem, drugs are the solution, even though when we hear that, it sounds so twisted. Mm-hmm. But as we've been in this field together, as we've watched this, we really understand what that means. And you highlighted something so powerful, not belonging, not knowing how to fit in. I don't know who my people are. I feel X, Y, and Z, less than, broken, disconnected. And I'm gonna just add in some things that are so common for us. I feel not intelligent enough. I'm not capable enough. I'm unlovable. I'm shamed because I do things or have done things in the past that aren't acceptable or that I'd be in trouble for. I'm too fat. I'm too thin. I'm not strong enough. I'm ugly. My teeth aren't right. Physical things, mental things, emotional things. We feel so broken so often, and we feel so inadequate. And I think that force that's there, that is kind of the dark side, to bring in Star Wars references, or to, if we want to talk about Mordor, or if we want to talk about, you know, what is it on Harry Potter, the bad guys, Voldemort, or like any of that stuff, whatever the evil is, like that's a real thing for us, as far as you're not good enough, or you suck, or you're terrible, or they're never going to love you. You're never going to, so on and so forth. And again, earlier mentioning, when somebody goes AMA, there's some vulgarity, there's some hatred, there's some animosity. When we get into the space of having that negative self-talk, it's not gentle. It's not tender. It's like, oh, you know, darn it. You know, you struggled. Like, look, get back up and you're going to be okay. It's no. Give up now. Quit. And it's hateful. So, and you even mentioned quitting. So many people would quit. Why didn't you quit? Why didn't you quit that quest to get better, to get well? What kept you going in the right direction that is ultimately responsible for where you are today?
Oh, man. Well, there was many, many times that I was about to quit, right? Mm-hmm. Many times that I had tried to quit. And I, you know, this part of my life, the spiritual part, you know, of what has kept me going, of having experiences of overdoses and surviving them, mm-hmm. and having these experiences of, you know, I overdosed on alcohol, for example. I overdosed on alcohol, was on life support with a 0.52 alcohol level, and, you know, woke up in the hospital hours later, you know, and was told that it was a complete miracle. There was no scientific or medical reason why I was alive, let alone not brain dead, right? And I'm like, okay, well, I didn't really want to wake up, Chris. You know what I mean? I don't think I consciously did it on purpose, but I subconsciously just didn't care. Mm-hmm. And I think at many times when I was ready to give up, there was something bigger than me that said, no, it's not your time yet. And I think hindsight, looking back, I see all those times, you know, all those times I overdosed on heroin and someone was there to Narcan me, or even when someone wasn't there and I wake up gasping for air with a little voice that said, God just saved your life, you know? And I didn't really believe in that. I didn't know what I believed. And at the time, I didn't take it as like, oh my gosh, okay, now I'm ready to change my life, you know? Mm-hmm. I was just like almost mad I woke up, you know? But it gave me a little bit of something, I don't even know what to call it, hope, drive, strength to just keep going one day at a time. My dad always used to say to me, Allie, the sun will come up tomorrow. All you gotta do is get through today. And he'd always say that to me, you know? And it's always stuck with me. And I think, you know, this motto that I live by today with the program I work of, it's one day at a time, that stuck with me, you know? And in the end, that's ultimately what got me sober, was I had two options. I was tired. I was broken. My solution, you know, as you mentioned before, right? These substances are our solution until they turn on us. You know, heroin was my best friend for a long time. Heroin was my comfort, my warm, fuzzy blanket is what I called it, because I didn't feel like I belonged. Like I'd mentioned, I didn't feel joy. I didn't feel happiness, like that warm, tingly feeling we get when we experience that. I didn't have that. And heroin gave that to me for a long time. And then when it turned on me, you know, those two options of, okay, I know what I need to do because I'd gone to treatment so many times. I know if I don't do it, I'm not going to make it because I believe what they're saying and my body's literally shutting down, you know, and, or I'm going to kill myself because, and a surefire way to do it, you know, no like trying to overdose because that didn't work a few times, you know, as I mentioned, and something happened within me that, you know, I got a random email from someone that was a total, not an accident, you know, and I believe in energy. I believe in a God. I believe in everything that's love and light. And that was my sign enough that, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm just going to do my best today. And that's all I can do. And, you know, I think I had a conversation with something bigger than me. I looked at myself in the mirror. You know, down the hall from you. And I cried to myself. And as I'm in this room in rehab again, and I looked at myself and I had a conversation with myself, believing that there was something bigger than me listening as well. And I just said, okay, I can do it today. I can do this today. And every single day since then, I've done that. You know, I've just told myself, okay, I can do this today. And almost 2.5 years later, what my life is like today versus what it was like then, just doing it one day at a time. I never imagined it could be so beautiful. But at that time, I didn't have a lot of hope. I didn't have a lot of faith. You know, I just didn't, I don't know how to explain it, but I just didn't give up. That was it. That's all I had in that moment. And I think the hard part too, Chris, is coming off heroin and alcohol and any substance, you withdraw, right? So not only are you experiencing this emotional torment that you felt for whatever your reasons are, that you don't want to feel the way you feel, that inner turmoil, you also feel this physical pain, you know, literal physical pain, literal hell on earth. I honestly don't know if there's anything worse than heroin withdrawals in my experience from what I have experienced. And it's, you just got to hold on, you know, and that first 2 weeks sucks. It's the worst. You don't sleep, you know, you're crapping everywhere. You know what I mean? It's terrible. And you just got to hold on. You got to have faith in something. And I was able to find that in my family, in a hope for a wife one day, you know, and a hope for my own family. And I channeled everything I had towards them. And when I'd look at myself in the mirror, I would say whatever I could to them, looking at myself. Okay. So I'm imagining this future wife of mine. Okay. I'm imagining my nieces, nephews. I'm imagining my future children of how much I love them, right? Or get to love them, because I didn't love myself, but I looked at myself and I did that. And I was told to do these I love yous. And I did them every single day and something happened, you know? So when I'm physically hurting and about to give up after I've made the decision to remove the substances, you know, then the hard part really begins. And that's honestly what I think saved me, you know, was looking at myself with tears. It's so uncomfortable telling myself I love myself, you know, because I didn't. Mm-hmm. And I just had faith when my therapist said, just, dude, I don't know how it works, but it works. And I was like, at that point, I'll do anything right now, you know.
My way hasn't been working. Mm-hmm. You know, so often in life, we think we know best. So often, because we have eyes, we have ears, we can feel it, we can sense it, and we perceive it as our truth, right? We perceive it as this is tangible. This is how it goes. And so then we hear something that's outside of that norm for us. It's a little bit different. It's new, and we go, I don't know. And so I want to, because you mentioned it, I want to pick on you a little bit. Specifically about the I love yous in the mirror.
Okay.
And this is something that is so common anymore, I think, in therapy, or maybe it's the connections that we have. Maybe it's our group. Maybe it's our, you know, the people that we've run with. Mm-hmm. But it's like, everybody knows that. Everyone knows where, you know, kind of like know where it came from, who taught me about the I love yous in the mirror. And as I ask my people to do that now, and I even ask people outside of my professional career to do the I love yous in the mirror. And it's a funky thing. It's mm-hmm. an awkward thing. And so as a person who was asked to do them, what was that experience like at first? And I know you said, because I didn't, or didn't feel it, or I didn't believe it. And that has been a very common thing for me from the seat that I sit in currently, that I'm asking people to do this thing that to them is a lie. To them in that moment, in that space, I'm asking them to say something to themselves, to their soul, that they don't actually believe. So what was that like for you to have to do the I love yous in the mirror?
Well, I make everything logical. And that's why I think I've had such a hard time with spirituality for a lot of years, because it wasn't logical. It didn't make sense to me. And when it came to the I love yous, you know, I'd heard this morbid reflection. Okay, I've heard this phrase. And I'm looking at, you know, I view myself with this morbid reflection. And I thought, okay, well, and if people would say to me, I wish you viewed yourself the way that I view you, Allie. You know, this is what I see in you. And I'm like, I wish I could too. Like, that would be awesome.
Right.
And I made it very logical. So I viewed myself literally, you know, and said, okay, look at your reflection, view yourself, look at yourself, and say the things that they have said to you. And to make it even more logical in my brain, you know, it's like if you want to fill a cup up of pure ice cold water, right? But you have sand on the bottom, it's going to be mucky, right? Mm-hmm. It's not going to be this awesome pure water. It's not going to be all love. You got to get the sand out before you can fill it with the water. I needed to get the pain out and the yuckiness out before I could fill myself with love. So in the beginning, it's kind of like withdrawals, right? I'm pulling out this sand. I'm pulling out this anger and hate and pain and trauma and all of these feelings of negativity I feel towards myself. I'm allowing them to get out of my body through my tears. You know, I'm crying as I'm saying this to myself because I don't believe it, but I had faith. I believed that I could believe it. I believed that if I could get it out, because logic makes sense to me, then I could actually fill it with a little bit of like, and then let it grow, you know, a little bit of love, to the point where when I had 6 months sobriety, I did it every single day. Every single day I sat 2 inches away from my face, looking at my reflection in my pupil, talking to myself, giving myself affirmations, saying these I love yous. And at 6 months, I started to cry and I realized it was a different tear. It was different. And I realized in that moment that I had genuinely fallen in love with myself. And that feeling, Chris, is a feeling that I wish the whole world could feel. You know, I harp on this with the clients I get to work with. Every single day, probably, I mention this because I want them to feel that joy. I want the world to feel that feeling of honestly and authentically loving themselves, you know, and because that is a feeling that I've always wanted. You know, and when I got that, I just cried even more, you know, happy tears of holy cow, you know, these I love yous actually work, yeah. You know, but that diligence of doing it for 6 months, every single day, it's, you know, it's dedication. I was dedicated.
Right.
I was dedicated. And to tell someone, hey, you know, it might be 6 months, it might be more, it might be less, that seems kind of daunting, you mm-hmm. know, and to have that faith of, well, I don't know if that's going to work for me. You know, I'm different. It's like, well, I am not different. I'm not an anomaly. I'm not, I've just done what is suggested to me and given it a whirl and tried it. And I've been able to feel the benefits, you know, but if we don't know what the benefits feel like, we don't want to try, especially when we're in that agony and that pain in the beginning.
we have a mutual friend who is the first one who said this phrase to me or introduced this concept to me, that if you imagine yourself 1 year from today and you're sober, would it be worth it to you if it took that long for you to get it? Meaning, for 364 days, there was desperation. There was even tragedy. There was sorrow, disappointment, failure, falling down. But on day 365 was when you made it, when you got it, when it clicked, when you understood and the light bulbs flickered on. Would it be worth it? And the answer, when we understand that, is a resounding yes. Because we can look back to what was a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. You know, when we're in that suffering phase, whether it's addiction, depression, anxiety, trauma, loss, homelessness, the list goes on with all the painful things. But many of those things aren't a single event. It's not just a one-time thing and you feel it and the pain goes away, the throbbing stops, you know, the wound heals superficially, and then it's done, no more. We carry weight from that. We carry that suffering is a bruise underneath the surface that just doesn't go away, and it becomes infected. And so I think when we are in a society as we are, that where let me just blame myself, let me acknowledge that I do this rather than project this on everybody else. But I get to wherever I'm going to get my fountain drink and they don't have a drive-thru. Oh my goodness, I'm so irritated. I have to get out of the car, right?
Right.
It's so inconvenient. I have to do something now. And I walk into the store and there's like three people in line and I'm so irritated because no, I need it now. And we have this mentality of getting irritated when we have to wait. You know, I was visiting with some really awesome people yesterday, and we joke about, and this came up, how soon do you need this? How soon do you want this? Yesterday, mm-hmm. Right? We do that. I say that all the time. Yesterday, like time is imminent. It's now. But the reality is we have the expectation that we're going to get results right now. So often when we're not succeeding, we give up because we get discouraged that we aren't getting the results. I mean, we're not doing the work. We're not putting in that effort to the degree that's needed. And I'm visualizing even now in my mind this image that I saw once of it was an illustration of like miners. You know, they've got the pitchfork, they've got the big old beard and overalls and, I don't know, hard hat. And somebody's been digging this tunnel to try to reach this huge mound of diamonds. And the one on, I think it's the one on the bottom, is walking backward. He's given up. And he's like a sliver of earth away from reaching that huge mound of diamonds. And the other individual is not as far along as that first person, but he still has the vigor and the momentum and the drive to keep going. And so you know that he's going to reach that. But I think so often in life, right before the miracle happens, right before we get it, right before we have our awe moment, we quit or we get distracted. Something else comes up in life and it pulls us away from that original mission, the original passion, what that thing is that we're trying to do. So thank you so much for sharing so much of you, that vulnerable space. I want you to talk now about what is your passion in your recovery as you are such a different human today.
Yeah, very different. And I think definitely still getting to know myself, right? I'm very passionate about growth in every possible way, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, socially, physically, you know, and I'm very passionate about trying to help others experience that growth as well. I think the solution to a lot of problems, especially addiction, is self-love. And I think, you know, I don't think I'm any different than my family members who don't struggle with addiction. You know, I think we all as humans have our demons. We all as humans struggle with self-love. We are constantly comparing ourselves to other people. You know, and I've heard people say, well, I was never homeless. Like, it's not as bad as you've had it. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second. Like, I'm not comparing my story to anyone else's. I'm not comparing my pain to your pain. Say right. Someone hasn't experienced that, but they had their animal pass away. I can't imagine. Like, I haven't had an animal pass away to have to feel that pain, right? And to be able to relate with feelings rather than the story is I'm so passionate about connection. You know, connection is everything. Connection to other humans, connection to the earth, connection to animals, connections to my things, having a healthy relationship with everything in my life, especially myself, you know? And I think that's, you know, why I made the decision to go back to school to become a therapist, you know, to be able to give back of how therapists have helped me in my life, to be able to meet with people individually and talk with them and to help them, assist them to see their worth, you know, that they are a beautiful human no matter what they have experienced, no matter the decisions they have made, that they are worth it and they are lovable, you know, and that is everything to me. In the clients I get to work with today as a case manager and the groups I get to teach and, you know, the laughter I get to share with them and the growth I get to experience to see in them is amazing. You know, I love it. I love it. I love it. And I think it's what life's all about, right? I don't think life is about, hey, let's see how much money I can get in my bank account. You know, I think life is about, hey, how many people did you help today? How many people did you look at and smile at? And am I perfect at this, Chris? No, like not by any means. You know, I wake up different today, I wake up with a happiness underlying feeling rather than a miserable underlying feeling when I was using. But there's still days where I'm like, man, I don't want to help anyone. I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to do this. And I think, well, would you rather have this or would you rather be who you used to be? Right. Mm-hmm. And I think a shift that's happened in me is every day, I can't say I've stopped doing this, but I think I'm a lot better at it, is I compare myself with who I was yesterday rather than comparing myself to others. Nobody has my story exactly. Nobody has my feelings exactly. So why would I compare myself to them? Why would I compare my success to someone else's success? You know, it doesn't make sense to me. And all I want to do is connect with others. That's a goal I have, you know, to find commonality, you know, and stop looking for differences, but find similarities and how can we help each other progress and grow? And that is hands down my biggest passion for sure.
I love that. You touched on so many things that are near and dear to my heart. And one in particular, that issue of when people hear your story, and I think it's genuine. I think it's loving. I think it's noble. I think it's a positive thing when people say, well, my story is not as bad as yours. I have not experienced that kind of pain. Well, that doesn't matter. We've experienced pain. And so the concept, Brené Brown is the expert on this, I think, and talks about how you don't have had to have the same experience, have to have had the same experience to know that pain. The pain of losing an animal, let's describe that for a moment. Devastation, loss, sorrow, grief. Wanting something more, wanting another chance. And so in no way do we attempt to mitigate anyone else's experience, but those are very similar feelings of those when somebody experiences the loss of a human in their life, of a loved one, when somebody loses their job. So the concept of loss is loss. And again, these are complex, tragic, horrific events that sometimes we have to experience, or sometimes we are in the way of when life happens. But one thing that I think that dark force tries to do is disconnect us and tell us that they won't get it. They don't understand. They've not suffered like this. Nobody knows this pain. And while that experience and that perspective is valid, it's not true. Because there is understanding. There is someone who has lived that same loss. They may be on the other side of the world, but they exist. There's a foundation that I love that when I was in graduate school, we had this crash course in loss. And it was a full, 15, 16 week semester course, 3 credits, but we got it done in like 2 weeks. And so we had hours and hours consecutively feeling pain. And it was, we used Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's book on death and dying in that class. And our professor, a great human, unfortunately had lost a child in stillbirth. And so her mission in life has become to help grieving parents, to help them connect. And she now has an international nonprofit organization that is dedicated to helping people through the grieving process and to help them feel like they are not, help them recognize they're not alone. But in that course, we had panels come in and we would hear them share their story. And so I think so often in our clinical training and in our training as people who work in the addiction recovery field or mental health treatment field, we're here for a reason. We haven't mirrored the same story. Your story and my story are different, but there are so many similarities within that of feeling, of being upset, of being angry, of feeling like you don't belong. Like there's something wrong with me. Why am I different? What's going on here? But being able to not quit, to not give up, even when, as we hear all the time, it gets worse before it gets better. When you quit using, it gets worse before it gets better. Mm-hmm. When you start going to therapy, it gets worse before it gets better, because we're talking about the pain now. We're talking about the discomfort. And so it's coming to the surface, and we don't have the same, coping mechanisms from before. The drug, the Netflix, the escape, the gambling, whatever it is, those things that we use that aren't coping skills, they're mechanisms to numb us. You mentioned Band-Aid earlier. Mm-hmm. Like there's a difference between Band-Aid brand or Band-Aids that are just basic, and now they have like Neosporin on them, right? Like I look at that as two different forms of treatment, two different forms of therapy, right?
Yeah.
There are differences in how we actually treat the pain, how we would treat the wound. And we can pretend it doesn't exist, or we can get in there and ruffle it up a little bit. Sometimes you have to scrub a wound to get out some of the gunk, and it's not pleasant. It's not fun. Sometimes that scrubbing or sometimes that cleaning, whatever that treatment looks like, feels more painful than the original wound itself. And so it's scary, it's complex, and it's ugly sometimes. But the healing that comes from that is so beautiful. And to be able to see somebody like you who is at peace with where you are now. And I love that you said, I'm not done. I'm not perfect. I haven't figured it all out, but we're on that journey. We all are. And it's a really cool thing to recognize I've got today. And so your dad, man, what wisdom. Yeah. The sun will come out tomorrow, but there's a condition, right? I've got to get through today. It's not a given that I'm going to make it to that. And so we hear in the rooms, I'll take another 24. We hear just for today. And those things are said for reasons. They're true. They work. And so often we focus on next week I'm going to do this, or next year I'm going to do that, or I need to really start this plan, this new hobby, or this new routine. No, stop. Start it now. Do something now about it. And it doesn't mean that it's a moving a mountain today, but it might be buying the gear to prepare to head up toward that mountain so that you can start doing work.
Yep.
being realistic with what's possible. So I love that you have that perspective, that you're able to recognize how difficult some of this work is, and that self-love, that inner work, that changing and the personal development that can take place in life that's needed. And you show up. You're showing up for yourself continually so that you can even more so show up for the people that are depending on you. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you for that.
Thanks. Well, and I think, Chris, you know, it's like you mentioned in the beginning, it gets worse before it gets better, right? So anytime with change is hard. And I think for me, I needed to have dreams. I needed to have goals. I needed to write down what's my why, right? Why am I doing this? What do I want from life? And I did that. You know, I remember sitting down in inpatient treatment. I got out a piece of paper and I grabbed one of my buddies and I was like, yo, let's write down where we want to be in a year. You know, let's do this. You know, let's break it down. So we did, you know, and I broke down, what did I want to be in 6 months? You know, and so I had very attainable goals, nothing crazy, very attainable. And I put it on my mirror, you know, and so I could see it every day. And everything that I wanted at 6 months, I got earlier. And everything that I wanted at a year, I got earlier. Like I had something to work towards, and it was incredible to me how I got even more than that, you know? And so still today I do that. You know, I write out my goals. I write out, what do I want from life? What do I want to achieve within myself? What growth do I want to experience, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually? I mean, last year, I don't know what I was thinking, Chris. I really don't. But I had this goal. I was going to trail run. It was 30. Okay. It was 30 trail runs totaling 100 miles. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I had this zest. I had this, I went through a breakup. So I had this pain that I needed to get rid of. Right. Mm-hmm. So I ran my butt off and I hit 30. It was 30 before 30. I was turning 30 November. Mm-hmm. And I started it in March. And so I reached this goal early. So I was like on a high one day from an awesome trail run. And I was like, you know what? Let's double it. Yeah, let's do it. You know, so I said to myself, okay, I'm going to double it. And so I had this goal of reaching 60 trail runs totaling 200 miles by the time I turned 30. And, you know, I was still working full time. You know what I mean? And I still had my whole life going on. And I had to break it down. Okay, how many trail runs do I need to do per week to get there? You know? And I remember it was like a few days. I was going to California to celebrate my birthday. And it was a few days before I had to go, and I had to do like 3 trail runs. And I was like, oh my gosh, man, mm-hmm. I was so tired. I was like, I didn't even fully enjoy it in this moment anymore because I had just pushed myself so hard. But that feeling that I had when I was done with my goal, you know, that I had doubled it from originally what I had planned. It's like, I'm proving to myself, I can do more than I think I'm capable of. And that's something I never knew I could do. I never knew. I don't know my limitations. I don't know what I'm capable of. I know I'm extremely capable of ruining my life. I know I'm extremely capable of hurting people. That's experience I have. Experience I do not have a lot of is success and reaching these goals. And that feeling of triumph, you know, of holy cow, I did this. You know, it's still foreign to me, but that was an awesome why, you know what I mean? I'm gonna do this no matter what. And I did. And it taught me that if I put my mind to something, I can do it. Mm-hmm. And it's already done in my mind, you know?
We overcome obstacles, and we so often surprise ourselves at how capable we are and how much we can do. And I think our growth is incredible. So that original goal that you set, when you got there, it's not, well, I'm done, so I'm going to sit on the couch for the next while until I turn 30 and just pat myself on the back. Let me reset. Let's keep going. What can I do? Set your sights on something even more powerful, even bigger. But I love also that you talked about, here's the goal. Here's what I want to do in a year and then in 6 months. And one thing that we can do today too is, where am I today, or what do I need to do today to keep myself on course to reach that 6 month goal, to reach that 1 year goal? Because we get stuck sometimes that, well, that's so far in the future, you know, I'll get there. And we forget that what we do today matters as far as how quickly we reach those goals, and if we ever do reach them.
Yeah.
Well, and so today matters.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, for me, what I still have to think of on the daily is, you know, I have this drive in me that I want to get high, right? And I used substances before, and many substances, and now that that chapter of my life is closed today, you never know about tomorrow, right? Yeah. One day at a time. But today it is. So how am I going to get high today? How am I going to feed my brain of what it wants of I want more, I want more, I want more? And channeling that in healthy areas of my life of finding different passions, finding different areas to channel it is everything to me. And having those goals is a way I get high, right? And I'm just not the type of person that I can wake up and just, I don't know what I'm going to do today. You know, like I get in trouble when that happens, you know, boredom and I don't get along. So I have to have a schedule and a routine and ways to channel that energy within me of, I want more, and being able to find that in life of, I want more life is something I just never, ever thought I could experience, you know? And I think it's honestly, when I open my eyes, when I wake up in the morning, something the biggest thing I'm grateful for. I'm grateful to be alive. And that was something that I did not feel for a very long time.
Miracle, I think, was made on your behalf. Those moments where you did not want to wake up and something was intervening to keep you from getting that wish. And here you are today with such a huge impact on the community here in Utah and your family and people who know you, people that follow you, just the inspiration that you bring. I'm so grateful for that miracle. I'm grateful for you. Where can people find you?
They can find me. My name is Allie York. They can find me on Facebook or on my Instagram, AllieYork22. Or they can find me in the mountains, trail running and hiking.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, is that what you mean? Like, is that what you're referring to? Or
there are going to be people who are so inspired by the parts of your story that you've shared today, and they are going to feel similarly.
Yeah.
You have such a wide range of experiences, and I know that people will be moved by you, by your words, and by your passion, and by your energy. And so I think people will be reaching out to you to say, I've been there. What you said really touched me. And this is in my experience, individuals who have had similar struggles, and also the parents of individuals who've had similar struggles, or the friends, the siblings, the exes even, who've been touched by addiction, who've had havoc wreaked on their lives as a result of the pain that comes from this. And the fact that you are healing, the fact that you are so healthy today, doing so many amazing things, is a huge testament to how inspiring these recovery stories are, to healing from that hurt, healing from that pain. And so, Brighton, tell us a little bit about Brighton and what you do, what they do as far as addiction treatment and helping the recovery community.
Yeah, Brighton is awesome. So I work as a case manager in the Salt Lake outpatient, and we are building a new, almost completed outpatient center with Sober Living, calling it a community center, that will have yoga there, a coffee shop, kind of building this little community of healing, right? And, you know, what I love about Brighton is the heart and the soul that comes with healing both mental health and addiction issues. And having the opportunity to work with some individuals where substance abuse is not, you know, it's a very different story from mine, right? It's they're not homeless, you know, they're professionals. They have careers, but they just ultimately struggle with, you know, what I've touched on, that mental illness on top of, you know, other things, but underlying that, a big part is not feeling lovable, not feeling worth it, and not feeling like they belong. And, you know, the work, all the treatment modalities you can think of, EMDR, you know, DBT, individual therapy, recreational therapy, the rec therapy there is awesome, which has helped me so much in my journey. When I went to treatment, you know, I went to majority of my treatments at Steps Recovery Center. I owe them so much of my success. So much, so grateful for them. And, you know, that's what I love about Brighton is they also equate that recreational therapy piece. Let's get them outside. You know what I mean? Let's teach them how to have fun sober. And I think from the top, one of the owners is a clinician himself. And that was, I think, one of the ultimate reasons why I wanted to go there. Why I wanted to be a part of what they're doing, because I knew the passion and the love for the healing that was felt when I met him. And yeah, I mean, this is going to be big, you know, this community center that's almost done. It's, you know, I don't even know how many beds, 50 something beds, I think is how many for sober living. And, you know, we'll have day treatment and IOP and just a lot of connection. You know, I think that's a big thing too, that we believe in is, hey, let's connect, you know, let's heal together and, mm-hmm. and, you know, let's find your purpose, you know, let's help you get there.
I love it. Thank you so much, Allie, for joining me today and for our friendship and for your willingness to open up and share your heart with our listeners and with the people that you work with and just the recovery community as a whole.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Very, very grateful.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I will talk with you soon. Okay. We'll reconnect and we'll do some more talks here.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to the Heal Hurt podcast, and we hope that you have a great day.